Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Hello there. I'm George Putnam. I'd like to begin with a fact, a simple yet shocking fact. It is this. We know that once a person is perverted, it is practically impossible for that person to adjust to normal attitudes in regard to sex. They constantly portray abnormal sexual behavior as being normal. They glorify unnatural sex acts. They tell youngsters that it's sparks, it's thrilling, it provides kicks to be a homosexual, a sadist, and every other kind of deviant.
Hi guys, I'm Ryan.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Jack.
And this is The Cubby House. This week we've got a whiteboard that tells us stuff.
The fact that it is our 13th show, and to do that we've also brought in someone pretty special.
Yes, a man that's very near and dear to my heart. Well, he couldn't come, so we brought Mike. Hi, Mike.
My aim's getting better, though. Hey, people.
We've got a few topics for you as well. Jack is going to show us something.
I'm keeping it a surprise.
Yes, even I don't even know what it is.
Mike and I are going to talk about polyamory, which is something that some of us believe in, some of us don't. What is it, and is it relevant?
But the forecast calls for a 100% chance of hilarity.
Wow, it was 100%. Oh, my God. The things you say when you don't have a gun.
Also, I want to talk about representation in the bear community, about how the bear community is represented in films, in books, etc. It's something that plagues my mind.
You get fleas over it?
Ew.
I'm sure you do.
And we will be doing our usual etiquette and shout-out sections.
But first, let's see how Mikey went with his pledge this time around.
I, Mike, do swear on this piece of leather, I will maintain the integrity, or lack thereof, which is more likely, of the Cubby House podcast. I promise to maintain the Cubby House's values that my tummy will be full, my play will be adventurous, and my attitude welcoming and inclusive. I promise to make no stupid double entendres, so there goes my conversation, or Family Guy or Simpsons references. If I should fail, I am prepared to be flogged, flagged, and face the punishment accordingly.
Jack, what have you got in your bag?
Remember how last show, during our True Truth and a Fact, I talked about how I bought a special book $30 or whatever it was.
Right. Scared now.
And we asked you to be abstinent about the book.
I have brought my copy of The Naked Truth, Sexual Purity for Guys in the Real World.
Wow.
And it's got a picture of an angsty-looking man looking at a woman that's blurred. And I believe that this book itself was the plague of my earlier teenage years. And I can only think that there were so many other people out there that it would have plagued them the same way.
The chick is probably blurred on the front cover because the guy is checking out the photographer.
But I'm only kind of thinking that this book, this wretched book, it is designed to make people feel so guilty about what comes naturally to them that... it's not going to be helping anyone. It's just going to be messing with people's heads. And to demonstrate, I'm going to read you a passage.
But hang on, before you go, couldn't you say the same about dieting?
Shut up.
That's a no.
Papa's talking now.
Ooh. Yeah.
This is a part of a chapter called Waiting, Waiting, and Waiting. And this...
Well, this sounds like fun.
The subcolumn is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity...
of waiting. Mm. Wow, how exciting.
Now, before I do that, I want to tackle a question many Christian guys Christian guys struggle with but are afraid to ask. Since God gave guys hormones that kick in before high school, why does he want us to experience sex until after we're married? Now, that's a fair question. Unfortunately, the Bible doesn't give us a lot of behind-the-scenes look at God's creative process. You won't find a verse why he made our bodies as he did, but you will find some passages that throw a whole new light into the idea of life before marriage.
Oh, I'm going to have to stop you right there. First off, guys get hormones before high school, so chicks don't get hormones at all.
Let me finish. I'm not done yet.
Oh, good.
Right now, before you go on, I'd just like to give out a huge shout out to all our friends at the Woodsboro Baptist Church. The Cubby House loves you, even though you hate us.
I'm going to skip a little bit. God isn't punishing you by making you wait for sex. He's giving you an incredible opportunity. You have a window of about 10 years before puberty and marriage to offer an awesome sacrifice to God with your body. You have the ability to bring honor to God in a way that married guys can't. It's all about how you use your body, the things you do with it, and the things you refuse to do with it. You can be a living sacrifice by resisting the temptations that bombard you every day, by battling the urges that constantly hound you, and by refusing to choose temporary measures over lifetime devotion. If you decide to accept the challenge of making your body a living sacrifice, not everyone will be rooting for you to succeed.
It said root!
In fact, you can count on one enemy to do everything in his power to make sure you fail.
Hugh Hefner.
He's Satan.
Close enough.
The devil. And the Bible describes him as a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. He doesn't just want to stop you. He wants to take you out of his game completely. The last thing in the world the devil needs is a young guy whose relationship with God is more important than anything else. The idea of offering your body as a living sacrifice scares him because he knows the incredible things that can come from it. That's why he'll use every weapon he can stop you. For example, he may use doubt to get inside your head and make you question God's word. It's a trick he's used before. He'll use these questions with you. Did God really say not to have sex before marriage? Isn't that just some person's interpretation of the Bible? Is it really wrong to have sex with a girl that you really care about?
At least without a condom, premarital.
Why do you need a ring and a marriage license to prove your love? Isn't God unfair to people who never get married? Does that mean they'll never find out what sex is really like? And does God expect you to stay sexually frustrated until your wedding day? How can sex be any good after you're married if you've never had any practice? Your enemy can make you start to doubt God's plan. He can chip away at your commitment. That's all I'm going to do. I mean,
thank
you've got...
God. No pun intended.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Get the ex-Christian started. No, seriously.
I need to see in that book, is there a page that says all characters in this book are purely fictitious? some sort of disclaimer, possibly?
Any resemblance to any people living or dead is purely coincidental.
That's it, exactly.
Well, it's totally screwed up. For a start, yep, obviously it's written for a Christian audience, so the Christian audience is going to believe in things like sin, and the idea that, you know, you can't have sex before marriage, all that sort of stuff. But look at what that's doing to young people. Like, you have issues where young people are being taught abstinence instead of, you know, actual healthy sex practices. They don't learn about HIV. They don't learn about how not to get pregnant. They learn to hold hands and to not give in to these natural urges that you have because you're an animal. You're a human. It's instinct to have these emotions. And if you just repress them all, you're going to explode at some point. It leads to fear and guilt and sin, and it's messy.
Could I say it leads to a lot of mental issues? Would you believe that it would cause, like, bipolar or multiple personality disorders just because you can't release something that is seemingly natural?
I wouldn't say it would lead to any specific mental issues because I'm not a psychiatrist. It's going to lead to emotional angst and grief over not being able to reconcile the natural urges you have in your body with a standard being set for you by a religion, which at one point basically said that you shouldn't have kids because if you have kids, they're being born into a world of sin.
This episode of the Cubby House podcast is brought to you by the Sarah Palin Institute of Contraception.
Emphasis on the word institute.
Which Sarah Palin?
What?
The Nailin Palin, Sarah Palin?
Are you high? Did you just have a space during that, I don't know, that 4 months kind of leading before the... Oh, wait, everybody's forgotten about that.
Protective
now.
Amnesia.
I'm sad to say that there was once a time when I believed, and now I kick myself for ever considering that.
So you go up to the fires and throw it in happily in hopes that it may actually do some good in stopping the fires, but destroying all evidence at the same time?
Cookie. I keep this book as a reminder. Yeah.
But you've moved on, obviously.
I've moved on.
You're a roaring little red-headed tiger now, or something like that.
Well, it only seems like a 180, you could say, for the person that was planning on saving himself till marriage, until whenever that was, to a person that's majoring in sexuality, gender, and diversity studies.
Well, of course, the assumption in that entire book is that you're going to be heterosexual for a start. Oh, I bet you it only talks about guys with girls, because, you know, Christian book.
Well, I mean, homosexuality is a sin anyway, so why would they... That's a completely different book itself, you know.
Yeah, and I've read it a few times. Mm-hmm.
So why I keep this book with me is because I know that one time that I was plagued by ideology like this, and the reason why I study sexuality, gender, and diversity studies is because one day I hope to be able to educate people so people won't be exposed to this kind of manipulative bullshit.
Is that why we did the whole porn story, so people know how it's done? It's okay to look at men, one-armed woodcutters and such.
That's how it's done?
Well, apparently so.
Oh man, I'm doing something wrong.
Ryan, yes. Ryan, you're referencing events that haven't happened yet. It's a future episode.
Oh, I beg your pardon, sorry. We can always just cut this bit out.
Or explain it by way of a time machine. Oh wait, you hate sci-fi.
Yes. Whatever.
Now, I am all for respecting people's differences, and I'm all for respecting people's religion. And you know that whenever a person starts off by saying that, it can never be good. And I like to say that your belief is not a safeguard against criticism. So, in conclusion, my review of The Naked Truth, Sexual Purity for Guys in the Real World, gets a 0 stars out of 5. What do you think, Margaret?
Will we not be seeing this on Oprah's Book Club or anything like that anytime soon?
I'm just suddenly seeing Ryan as Margaret.
I was going to say fuck you, but no, it's okay. Aww. No, yep. I won't.
You have the power of dice.
No, I won't. I won't.
I think we're learning to behave.
You win this time. But I'll get you your little dog too.
I don't have a dog.
It's because I got it already.
Crap.
One plus one is two. But some people say 1+1=window, which gives you a perspective to a whole lot of other possibilities, does it not?
Well, those people that believe that 1+1=window, I want to punch them. It's kind of like scissors, paper, stone, you know, the whole paper covers rock kind of thing. No, it doesn't. Stone would beat the shit out of paper, you know? And if somebody goes, oh, my paper covers
your stone...
Where
are you going? Where are you going with this?
Ryan, you're a very abstract person.
Go
on.
Considering... Where I was leading to, for the most part, society tells us you were to have one partner at any one time. In the Western world, in some parts, one guy can have 3 wives, or more. Hence the concept of polyamory in the Western society, where one person can have multiple partners, but not necessarily be in a complete relationship with, say, 3 people or more people.
I think it might do the listeners justice if you described polyamory, please, Mike.
Polyamory is a cobbled together word, poly, many, amory, love, many loves. The basic idea is having open, honest, ethical relationships with more than one person at one time. It can happen in lots of different ways, and there's a gazillion different ways of having the relationships and ways of explaining the relationships. But say, just as a basic example, one person dating, say, I'm dating Ryan. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
How you doing?
Aww. Good. How are you?
You want to, you know, hook up for a while?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do stuff.
Woo, cool. And then Jack comes along and I start dating Jack. How you doing, Jack? So I'm dating Ryan. I'm dating Jack. They both know this isn't cheating. They understand that they both exist and there's no surprises here. That gets referred to as a V.
But just to clarify, Ryan and Jack aren't seeing each other as well as...
Because if they were doing that, that would be a triangle.
Mm. Yes.
See how much fun this is?
Yeah.
We're learning
But really, basically it's just having more than one relationship at a time, but being honest and open about it. Some guys don't necessarily grab that and think it's cheating, because you're dating more than one person at a time, and, well, you wouldn't tell the other person because they wouldn't be okay with it, which comes as a rather nasty shock to my boyfriend when he's told that he's not okay with it.
I suppose the question that begs to be asked is, does this work?
It does work. Honest and upfront, I went into my current relationship being fully upfront that I would not be monogamous. I have tried monogamy, I have successfully tried monogamy, and I decided I really didn't like it as successful as it was. My current partner and I are in a polyamorous relationship in that we're open to dating other people. We're both picky bitches, so we're not seeing other people right now. We've had other people that we've had in our lives as fuck buddies, as potential members of the relationship in some cases. We haven't gone to the point where they've actually become either a boyfriend to me or a boyfriend to him or a boyfriend to both of us. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but it means that we're looking for the right people. We're not so desperate just to grab the next person that wanders along to prove that we really are this.
So does this mean anytime soon we'll be having like a reality show where you'll be casting...
Oh, members? Hella no.
Why not? It would be fun.
You can't trust reality TV. They edit everything.
So?
Look, for all I know, Jack's going to edit me to sound like an evil, cruel bastard right now. It would be accurate.
I was going to say, he doesn't need to edit that to make it happen.
So I suppose that a distinction has to be made between a polyamorous relationship and an open one.
I think, well, okay. I'm coming at this from my perspective of being in the gay community. So you do tend to see open relationships. In terms of, you know, you can go out and you can have sex, and the couples develop their own rules about what is okay and what is not okay. You can only have sex when I'm there. You can only have sex if you go to Club 80. You can only have sex if you're drunk and it happens and it's okay because it was an accident, but you really shouldn't do it, and tell me about it afterwards, okay, but don't do it. You can have lots of different rules around it. An open relationship tends to be more towards the sex side of things, whereas polyamory tends to be more towards actually having relationships. Doesn't mean I won't hook up for sex. My personal preference is to know the person, and at the very least, they're a fuck buddy. They're actually a friend that I'll hook up with, not just a casual one-off or someone who I'll only hook up for the fucking, but we never talk, we don't really do much. But ideally, it's actually to have a relationship with them. I think part of it's also finding where the relationship rests by itself. For instance, you might naturally be romantically inclined to one person, whereas for another person, the sex is fucking hot. But if you actually try to date this person or be in a romantic relationship with this person, there'd be a murder at some point. That doesn't discredit the fact the sex is fucking hot, and it doesn't make the sex any less valid.
So how did you come to the conclusion that you were this way? Was it just trial and error? You tried all these different relationships and none of them quite fit, so this one wasn't too hot or too cold. It was just right.
Do I look like Goldilocks?
Goldilocks, maybe.
Oh, lovely. I went through a couple of relationships, as everyone does. I mean, I'm only 26. I haven't exactly been around the entire town yet. I'm planning that for my 27th birthday. But for that, I mean, you go through relationships and you find out what works and what doesn't work. Do I like dating men who are more dominant than I am? No. Do I like dating men that are more submissive than I am? No. Same way. I dated people and I didn't see the point. I met guys that I really liked. I met some guys that I fell in love with while I was dating someone else. And it didn't make any sense to me why I shouldn't be able to fall in love with this person and why I shouldn't be able to express my love with this other person just because I'm also in love with my current partner. There was no boundary there that I should, you know, have to stop where my love is.
It seems as though our society tends to hold the assumption that love is a limited resource which can only be distributed in such a way to certain people.
The really classic one that gets trotted out for this is a mother or any parent loving their kids. You don't love your second child. Well, hopefully you don't love your second child less than your first child. Just because it's another child doesn't mean you've got a finite resource of love to give them. You don't love a partner any less because there's another partner there already. I mean, there are human constraints. There are 7 days in a week. There are 24 hours in a day. I go to uni. I play World of Warcraft. Please don't hurt me, Cookie. We...
No, it's Ryan.
I'm the anti-WoW person.
Oh, no, I heard him. There are human constraints. You only have so many hours in a day. There's only so much you can do. That means that you have to plan. You have to be aware that, you know, I have dinner with my boyfriend on this day. I then have, you know, a date out at Brunswick Street with my sweetie the next night or the night after. And oh shit, I've got a 3,000-word essay due on Friday. There are priorities.
So there's no favouritism.
You try not to have favouritism. It's also something you need to be really aware of. I mean, hopefully if I'm playing favourites by dating Jack all the time and barely going out any of the time with Ryan, Jack's going to step up and go, "Oi, where are you? What are you doing? I haven't seen you in 3 days. And it would be nice to actually talk to you occasionally."
Besides, I need your sociology notes.
Now, morally, is it the fact that you've gone into a relationship being open and trusting, does it tend to, in your experience, work if, you know, something comes up, you get shitty with them, and you tend to start hiding secrets? Does it start a negative ball rolling?
Potentially it can, but I think that's more about how you deal with those issues anyway. That shit's going to come up if you're monogamous, if you're polyamorous, if it's your best friend doing it. If you don't have good communication skills, if you can't be honest with your partner or the other person about what's going on, if something comes up with me and my boyfriend, we'll say so. The basis of our relationship is that we are honest with each other. And that even goes to, I'm going on a date with blah tonight, and the boyfriend turns around and says, "I'm feeling a little uncomfortable about you going on a date with this person." That's okay. You're allowed to feel uncomfortable about me going on a date with this person, because jealousy, insecurity, just plain niggling voice of paranoia, and that happens to me as well. It's not just him. My boyfriend is not a nutcase. Hi, baby.
No, your boyfriend is a friend of the podcast on Facebook. Then that's good enough for us.
Yeah. If he calls and leaves messages, don't answer them.
That 9005 play, the cubby line.
Thank you.
Wow, nice throw in there.
That was subtle, smooth. What you did there. It's communication. It's knowing what's going on with yourself as well. I mean, not everyone's going to want to be polyamorous. Not everyone needs to be polyamorous. But if it's something that you want to do, or even in an open relationship, setting the boundaries of where and when I can go and get my cock sucked. You need to be able to be honest about that kind of stuff, otherwise it's going to end in tears and flaming and rocks falling and everybody dying.
For the people playing at home, what's the difference between polyamory and polygamy?
Basically, polygamy is the idea of one person with multiple partners. So think of it as a star with the one person in the middle. Then you've got polyandry and polygyny. Polyandry being woman, multiple husbands, and polygyny being... No, sorry. One of them is woman, multiple husbands. One of them is husband, multiple women. It sucks that I don't remember it off the top of my head.
Yeah, totally.
But you get the idea.
I'm pretty sure that was on the anthropology exam.
Yes, which is why I'm sitting there going, you got the word wrong.
People, you can Wikipedia it if you're really interested.
If you really want to, you can also Wikipedia polyamory. Polyamory is everyone can have multiple partners. I mean, obviously you don't just go out and find as many partners as you want, well, because you have limited time, but there's no restriction. It's not the man has multiple wives, the women can't have other partners. I'm free to date, my boyfriend's free to date, I'm free to have other boyfriends, he's free to have other boyfriends or husbands or whatever. I mean, we've already had the marriage discussion. He's not up for it, but he's happy to be there for the ceremony, which is nice of him.
For the free grog.
I'm not sure. It's that or he's going to throw things. Knowing him, it's both.
Confetti, perhaps?
Possibly not.
Or empty bottles of scotch.
I'm thinking fruit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fine. So,
foo-fi.
Is a polyamorous relationship difficult to explain to new people?
Oh. I'm on Bear Dub. I'm on Manhunt. I'm on Gator. I'm on Daddy Hunt. On all of them, I say up front, I am currently in a relationship. Yes, my boyfriend knows. And no, he doesn't give a damn because he's doing the same thing. I'll say polyamorous. Occasionally I'll change it out so I don't have it there, but I talk to people and explain it if they start chatting to me. I have people who have given the response of it's cheating. I have people who have made the immediate assumption that you are not a nice person, you have no ethics, Or I've had people who have completely ignored and go, hey, I want to fuck. Generally, they get ignored. It can be a bit difficult to explain at first, because people come with their own baggage about what a relationship is and what a relationship means to them. You kind of got to jump over that, or, you know, try and get through that. The same way that someone goes, well, how do you know you're gay?
You just know.
Yeah, and they have their own ideas about what it means to be gay, and you don't really look gay. So how come that works? And how can you possibly be gay if you're not really? You know, how, you know, what's polyamory? In my crankier moments, the response tends to be, Google it. Because I'm not here to educate you. I'm not an evil bastard, so I will mostly say what I've said. It's an open relationship where I can date other people if I want to. I don't tend to run into many gay guys who get it. The sex is fine when you bring in emotions to it, to the point of where it's actual having more than one partner. They tend to get a little sketchy over it.
Do you find that in general, even with guys who are after monogamous relationships, the emotions are sometimes hard to explain?
I think with guys who are dead set in a monogamous relationship, it tends to be a case of, but how could you do it with more than one person? Or, that would be cheating, is the immediate response most of the time. That would be cheating. And you sort of have to step back and go through the process again of, the other person knows. The other person is okay with it. The other person is going to meet you at some point. If you were to date me, you're more than likely going to go to the same parties as my other partner.
I was going to say, is it PC for you to introduce your partners to your partners?
Well, I'd kind of hope they'd get along. As amusing as it would be to have two partners who are constantly planning to assassinate the other one.
Sounds like a sitcom to me.
Yeah.
The odd couples.
If my life ever turns into an episode of Friends, you can shoot me.
If my life ever turns into an episode of Seinfeld, you can shoot me.
No, I was thinking if my life turns into an episode of Star Trek, you can shoot me. Cookie? Hannah Montana, possibly?
No, I was thinking more...
Tool time.
Not even. No. American Dad.
Why is that bad?
I have fish talking to my... I have aliens running around in my house...
Cross-dressing aliens.
Effeminate cross-dressing aliens.
Thank you.
As opposed to the butch cross-dressing aliens.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I have a daughter that basically wants to kill me for all that I stand for, and I have a son that loves me. Son's okay, but the daughter...
I like the daughter.
Yeah.
You would, you hippie.
Thank you.
You liberal. Dirty liberal.
Yeah, just, you get the point.
Yeah, good. I was going to say, we're kind of wandering from the point right now.
Hello, tangent.
So, what are the mistakes that a lot of people make in polyamorous relationships?
Oh, well, I don't know about the mistakes everyone makes. Some of the mistakes I've made, not mentioning that I'm going to have sex with someone before I have sex with someone, which could be okay if you have an agreement where that's allowed. Our basic agreement is you give the other partner a heads up.
By the way, Kevin, I'm pinching your partner tonight. Okay.
And considering this podcast is going to get like a month later, hi, baby, I'm sorry. I've gone off and played without saying I am going to go and play. I mean, it's that much of a non-issue when we were actually talking about this in the car a couple of days ago about me coming on the podcast. We actually had to stop and think when that happened, because it didn't register as that big. We both sort of went, okay, that was a stupid thing to do, and got on with it. Like, no one's been hurt. The agreement was broken, but the sex was safe, and I told him as soon as I could afterwards, and I was damn sorry. We have room in the relationship agreements that if something happens, it happens. As long as you're safe, it's all right. But it's preferable to give the person a heads up, because that means that they're not getting blindsided. That if jealousy is going to come up, it's better to handle the jealousy by making sure the person's okay beforehand than it is just to let it explode. Because the person's been given no notice and you're not taking responsibility for your own actions.
So in this particular case, it's not better to ask for forgiveness.
It's better to get permission.
Yeah, that's
the one. Yeah. Far better to get permission, because usually the response is, go have fun.
Now, is there much difference between the vanilla polyamorous relationship, if there is such a thing, and people say having a mama bear, a papa bear, and a baby bear, or pair of partners having a pet that happens to be human?
There's a fairly big crossover between BDSM kink communities, leather communities, and polyamory communities. I mean, it's not freaking huge, but you get a crossover between those groups. So polyamory is going to come up in various different communities like leather and BDSM. I mean, there's a really popular polyamory podcaster, Mistress Matisse. She's a dom. She's poly. It's part of her lifestyle as well.
Hi, Mistress, if you're listening.
It's like saying, you know, what's a strictly vanilla polyamorous relationship? Ma and Pa and Auntie Joe and Uncle Ben and Uncle Roger and Auntie whatever to the kids. As far as they know, they're just uncles and aunts. Or you have someone wandering around the house wearing nothing but a leather jockstrap and a collar. I mean, it depends on what your lifestyle's like. If anyone would like to wander around my house in leather jockstrap and a collar, I'm okay with that.
Cookie, you've scored.
What's your number again?
Later.
Send in your resume and cover letter in full.
And penis size too.
Size podcast at thecubbyhouse.net. Where you can send in that or any other submissions, comments, or anything else that you'd like to send in.
You've got to hit Jack's button quicker.
So if a person's wanting to learn more about polyamory, where would they go?
Oh, hey. Okay, I'm a geek. Sorry, so I'm going to make geeky references. Obviously, if you listen to podcasts, you're listening to this one. There's a podcast called Polyamory Weekly. The host is Cunning Minx. They're an amazing resource. There's a community behind them. She's based in America, and a lot of the stuff she talks about is American-based in terms of events that are happening. But they also talk about how to deal with issues that come up in open relationships and polyamorous relationships and freaking monogamous relationships. The biggest issues on the show are communication issues. There's also books like More Love, or there's also The Ethical Slut, which is the book that I got started on. Either of them you can find on Amazon really easily. They both talk about making rules, making boundaries, dealing with jealousy, and what it means to be an ethical slut, or to be polyamorous, or to be a raging big bottom who likes to go round the lair every night if you want.
Not mentioning any names or anything.
Of course not.
Yeah, we've already mentioned Amazon.com and Club 80 and why stop here?
Also, if you're on LiveJournal, I'm expecting payment from all... No. If you're on LiveJournal, there's a polyamory community, which is polyamory. They're fairly large. They're a good resource, and people come on asking lots of questions. What do I do? Because my partner just did blah. And you'll get good responses from people who are experienced and have been doing this for decades, in some cases, and know their crap.
A new age of love and spiritual enlightenment is coming soon to a...
Oh, dear God.
...to a place near you. Representation. It is something that I kind of ponder about whenever I see stuff about the bear community. While I was doing Vox Pops for the podcast a couple of weeks ago back at Midsummer Carnival, I was asking people what a bear was. And naturally people said that they're larger people, they're hairy, they're homosexual. Thank you for lifting up your shirt.
Sorry,
I've lost my train of thought now. Now I was feeling vulnerable.
We were talking about fat, naked people.
Fat, naked people.
Flag for two.
Flag for what? He hasn't done anything wrong.
Yet.
Flag Cookie. Or just take the dice off.
What's with the expectation I'm going to do something wrong? It's like you people know me.
You're just prejudiced against him. You've judged him prematurely. No, so you're prejudiced.
There's nothing worse than premature judgment.
So,
getting back,
and that was pretty much the skinny of it. So that's pretty much how...
skinny. That was funny.
That's my catchphrase.
Sorry,
it's the skinny of it.
Yeah, I know. And my catchphrase is pointing and laughing. What's your point?
Hang on. That's my catchphrase.
Let's get on with what I was saying. I don't
tangent.
I was also reading a volume of erotica, and as little as I expect from erotica. The main theme about it is that they were husky, homosexual, and hairy. So I'm kind of thinking, is this it? I mean, you keep on sometimes hearing about all this ideas of brotherhood, or the idea of being mature, being down to earth. But it seems as though that if you're homosexual and you're hairy and you're husky, the three H's...
Mm-hmm.
Then that's it. I was kind of wondering, is this really the image that we're presenting to ourselves? And should there be more?
I'm going to be a bit of a hypocrite here. I kind of agree. I do think that that's pretty much it, because I am part of a Cubby podcast. I am a committee member of Vic Bears, but I do believe that the brotherhood side of things, as far as the bear goes, it's non-existent. It's purely a friendship. The people that you see out and that you're friendly with and you kiss hello and you talk about your day and everything, they're not going to bail you out of jail. They're not somebody that you could ring up after you've murdered somebody and they will hide you out. Your friends are people that would do that. So I think as far as the quote-unquote term brotherhood, it doesn't exist. We are as bitchy as a community as any other community is out there, if not more. So, as I said, you know, I don't really mean to be hypocritical, but unfortunately I say it as I see it.
I'll disagree with you slightly. We've said it on this podcast before. The concept of bears and a bear community in Australia, as opposed to in America, Canada, in Britain, it'll all differ and whatnot. In Australia, we've got this mentality of, it's not brotherhood, but it is mates, buddies, people we hang out with and we're friends with.
But I'm not exposed to that. So you are right in the sense that over there, that brotherhood probably is there. Like, for example, a lot of people, when you go to America and they say, you know, if you want to travel, you're always welcome to stay at my place. You can do that. But here, it's like, yeah, if you want to stay here, that's fine. P.S. You need to put out in order for you to stay here. And I'm generalizing because there are people that probably would not do that.
Do you think that's also something because of the age of the bear community in Australia as opposed to the age of the bear community in America? I mean, is there that big a gap between the two forming, really?
As in, like,
the bear community... I don't know, I'm asking.
The bear community being older, like, no, as, it's being around longer than the community.
How long the actual bear community has been in existence strongly in Australia as opposed to how it's been in America? I don't know. Is there that big a gap between the two?
I think it's probably just what you're used to.
Because I know in, like, another community... I'm a pagan, and as a member of the pagan community, the community here is a lot more disparate and fragmented than it is over in America, where there are more people in the community and it's been around longer, so it's had longer to actually form stronger bonds. So do you think that could contribute to what it's like here in Australia as well, because of the smaller number and the relative youthfulness of it?
Or maybe just as Australians, we're fucked. We can't get along with each other.
Well, that's cheery.
Yeah, so, okay. Moving, I'd agree, but yeah, okay. Moving away from brotherhood, it's an identity. So it's not only what we identify, but what we're perceived as. Now, as you found, Jack, a lot of people have this opinion that a bear in a singular form is a husky, hairy guy that doesn't necessarily conform to the other stereotypes, shall we say, of the gay community. And very much so, it's mostly based on visual aspects. However, as somebody who now identifies as a bear who once didn't, I can also turn around and say, well, there is that kind of down-to-earth sense that we don't form into the whole Twinkie sense that we go out, we party, we get drunk. And there are other aspects and other labels I could use.
But there are bears out there who do drugs and they get drunk and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, and there are twinks out there who don't go out and get shit-faced every night.
Well, I think one of the things is that the commonly understood beginning of the bear community was that it was a reaction to the clone look in America.
Yes.
You had the pretty muscled and, you know, the well-manicured, and then the bears came out because they weren't muscled. They were hairy. They didn't manscape or whatever the fuck. Although I don't think they had that term back then. But they were a reaction to a certain look within the main gay culture.
Yes.
And as such, they were offsiders. They were a minority. When they became strong enough to become their own subculture, really, they then start excluding others. I mean, I can tell you that I've gone to the Laird and I've felt like an absolute sore thumb there, because I don't fit into the customary uniform. Pretty much. I mean, I go there, I'm standing there talking to guys I know, I look around, I realize that I'm the only person there not wearing Blundstones, Black Bonds t-shirt, blue jeans. I'm like, crap, I walked into the backstage of a porn set, no one told me.
But I mean, looking at you right now, you're wearing the funky 70s style glasses, which are kind of popular now. You're wearing funky jewelry.
I am indeed a fashion plate.
You are wearing a novelty tee, you're wearing cargo pants, and some kind of $20 Target sneaker. So...
Yeah, Tajay.
It's, well, the Red Circle Boutique, or whatever you choose to call it. That's pretty much what a Cubs uniform is, I would imagine.
Up until a month ago, I had a pink mohawk. Does that count?
You're weird.
Thank you.
No, but I would agree. Yes, it does. Because a pink mohawk would also be associated with the likes of punk star, punk culture. So which I think the Cub aspect has an influence in as well.
I think the Cub look does borrow a lot from punk and skater in terms of the clothing and styling of self. But I think that when you go to like the Bear events, there is a certain degree of appearance. There are uniforms. You're expected to wear certain... well, you're not expected, but there are certain things that get worn, like the Black Bonds t-shirt, the jeans, the boots, because they all flag, you know, masculine butchness, which is attractive. And so the guys wear that. So I come along in like this preppy little shirt with a jumper over the top and sleeves rolled up and this little fake mohawk and Converse sneakers, and I sort of sit there going, hi! And everyone just sort of goes, what's that? Part of that's my own paranoia and insecurity talking, but part of it's very much people sort of look at you and go, you don't fit in here. You've all been to the Laird. Have you heard them talk about tourist night?
Would that be Friday night?
Yeah. One night of the week when all the people who aren't bears come to the Laird wearing fucking Quicksilver t-shirts and all this bullshit, and they call it tourist night because they don't fit into the bear stereotype.
I've never heard of that before.
No, nor have I.
I've heard it a ton from guys. Just the idea of it being tourist night. I didn't realise there was a door check at the Laird. Are there visas that we need? Have I been trespassing?
No, not at all.
But it's that exclusionary idea. It's like if you're a bear chaser or a cub chaser, but you don't fit into that image of a bear or a cub. Sometimes there's a bit of static there from guys that, well, you're not a bear. You're not a cub. Why are you here? Why are you on Bedda? Why are you on Bear 411?
So the question that begs to be asked, I think, is that if that's all there is to it, then why? Why would a person willing to identify oneself as a bear or a cub? I think there's evidently something beyond just the tangible physical bonds that people have. Otherwise, what's the point?
I completely agree with you, Jack. I mean, there's one thing that irritates me is that when I first got interested in the bear community, I mean, I was a twink. And it was like you, Mike, when you went out and I, you know, I wore a nice jumper and a nice pair of cargo pants and because I dress up and blah, blah, blah. And I walked in and it was just like those moments in the saloon where the bartender stops playing and everybody turns around and looks. And I totally agree with you, Jack. It's a sense of like, we're told over and over again that it's about an attitude, but it's not about a look. But when we go out, it's the wrong attitude and it's always about the look. So does this mean we're going to start taking on the world and cheering people up and it's okay to be different? Or do we just conform and wear the jeans and the black t-shirt?
I think, like, answering, like, Jack, you were asking, you know, why do we say we're bears or cubs? I think it's a secure identity. If you find yourself in the gay mainstream and you're not fitting into the projected image of beauty, you're not young, you're not skinny, you don't have a complete lack of body hair or tasteful body hair, and you don't necessarily like that look either, and you see this other group of people who are more accepting of your body shape and more accepting of your body hair and that sort of thing, you'll take that because it means you're not alone. It means there's a label you can put to yourself when the mainstream is saying you don't fit. I think there's more to that than there is any sense of brotherhood or strong ties between people in the bear community. I mean, friendships develop, groups of friendships develop, that happens in any community. But I think that it's more about the sex and it's more about, and I, having listened to some of the Cubs Out Loud broadcasts, I reckon one of the two of them are going to go, it's not about sex. I know I've heard that opinion put forward before. I think that it's a identity thing, and sex is the basic point of any gay community. We find other things in common, but we start with the fact that, hey, I like cock. You like cock too. Cool. I like hairy cock. You like hairy cock too. It's...
let's be friends.
Let's be friends. Handshake, not
if
with your
life
mouth.
Was a blue light disco. So.
Shout outs. Message.
I've been in liaison with some of our cubby listeners in Sydney, and we love every single one of them because to us they are a little number that says you have downloaded our podcast.
Hey, Sydney Siders.
But you're also so much more than that, so much more than a statistic. You are a valid listener with valuable ideas and stories which you can send into the cubby house so we don't have to read out pornography, which we will in the next episode.
Any shout-outs, Mike?
To my lovely and very understanding partner, Kevin, who's going to be listening to this whenever Jack gets around to editing it. I love you. Please don't hurt me.
I'm going to do a big shout-out to all the cubs and bears that might be at an event that I'm going to be at, which is the Hub of Horror, which will be a horror convention.
And
Cookie, Monsieur?
Me? Well, I'm actually going to do a big shout-out because I will be going up to Sydney on Thursday the 5th of March, coming back on the Tuesday, and for all those bears who I do run into, and those that I'd like to but don't, want to wish you a good and loving Mardi Gras, and sorry if I didn't catch up with you, thank you if I do catch up with you, and happy Mardi Gras!
Yeah, you reminded me, I'll be at Chill Out, so yay to all the bears and everybody else.
Provided that Dalesford hasn't gone up in smoke by the
weekend.
Well, we're kind of hoping not.
Otherwise, then...
Yeah, for those who are wondering, yes, we are still having bushfire issues in Victoria, and hopefully after the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday-ish of this week, hopefully it'll all settle down weather-wise.
Thanks to the help of our very, very, very brave fireys.
Yes. We couldn't do anything without it.
But you know who else is brave? The Bears and the City Boys, who are approaching their 50th podcast.
Woo! Oh, is that why they've been so quiet for the past month?
That's right. I think they're waiting for Mardi Gras.
No.
So it's a big milestone. It's half of 100 and double 25.
He do math good.
Yeah, just make me feel old, thanks.
And
aww.
And the square root of something. Square root. So
that was a double entendre.
Yeah, can we flag that?
That is a flag.
Oh.
Dice, please.
Where did I put it?
Oh, story.
Didn't you drop it?
Here it is.
Don't you usually remember where you put
the
it?
The dice.
Actually, Mike, you have the honour of throwing it at
him. Waha!
See what's...
Number five.
A five is a dare challenge.
Oh, God.
Again.
You know what? Why don't we just put it out to our listeners?
Ooh!
What do you want to see Jack do?
He's evil.
Yes, write to us at...
podcast@thecubbyhouse.net.au.
He's so well trained.
Or call us at Skype on 9005 play. Well, that's if you're in Melbourne, of course. Add on all the additional area codes and whatnot.
Or we are on Facebook as Cubby House or
the Cubby House Horde.
Yes, the Cubby House Horde is the group if you wish to join that. And you can check out the website thecubbyhouse.net.au.
Until then, I'm Ryan.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm scared.
And
and thank you so much, Mike, for coming along and spending time with us. And you can send us your psychologist bill if you wish.
Yeah, thank you for letting me come and play. And thank you for letting me leave mostly unmolested. Stop touching me there.
It's a good thing.
Cheers, guys.
Cubby House was made in conjunction with Joy 94.9. For more podcasts, check out joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.